tell me what's happening, what's the buzz? 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 Welcome to Friday, and welcome to KUOW's Week in Review, today before a live audience at the Youngstown Cultural Arts Center. I'm Bill Radke. You are in West Seattle now. This is election district number one. Numero uno, because Seattle has split itself up. No longer will all the city council members be elected citywide. You have to go hyper-local to represent your district. And we're going to tell you how that might change your city in a few minutes. But first, let's inspect the week's news and see what is worth keeping. Story number one. As of this morning, your state legislature begins its second overtime session. They still have not written a budget. The state is notifying workers of the possibility of a government shutdown. Seattle Channel host Joni Balter, why are our lawmakers still in session?
They're still in session because they're thinking about the future, to tell you the truth. So if they wanted to sit down right now, they could settle this budget, mostly because they got a windfall from the booming economy.
But what they have enough money now to come up to agree on a budget.
They have enough money to deal with 2015 to 17 with a few little arguments here and there. But what you have is you have Democrats who are pretty darn committed to getting something like a capital gains tax that would help them in the future pay for things like mental health, early childhood education, teacher raises, and some other raises to kind of reflect the fact that we're not still in that same recession.
And in the future, is that a tax they would plan to ratchet up?
No,
is that why it's
no,
so important
no,
to get
no,
that
but
tax
just the idea
in
that
now
they
for
would,
future?
They would have the ability to use that also in the future for the McCleary case. So on the Republican side,
this is the
side,
Supreme Court decision says you got to fund education and you're not doing it.
And thank you for that. Mm-hmm. On the Republican side, they just desperately do not want to raise taxes. And so the windfall that came in from the economy doing so well made them say, hey, let's pack it up and go home. But there's a problem there. And the problem there has to do with, I think the Republicans are just too darn rosy about pot revenues. And they should have learned this. I think they're counting on $1.1 billion over 4 years for pot taxes to save the budget. In other words, we don't need a capital gains tax, they argue. But we should have learned from the campaign when folks were talking about pot revenues being up to $500 million a year. Hello, they're like $50 million, $53 million to be exact. So that's just not a smart way to go. Colorado found the same thing. They used a number, $70 million, that they were going to get in the first year from pot taxes, and then the governor came along there and said $100 million. The number was $44 million. I think that's risky.
Okay, so Joni's reason number one was this: they're still in session because this isn't just about this session. This is about the future. C.R. Douglas, why do you think these lawmakers can't get it done?
There are two major reasons. One is we have divided government. We're one of only seven.
By the way, C.R. Douglas, Q13 political analyst.
Thank you. Yeah. We are only one of seven states that have each chamber, House and Senate, controlled by different parties. Most states, the same party control both. It is a lot easier to negotiate in those states. So divided government is one reason. The second reason is this Supreme Court decision mandating that they put a lot more money into basic education. In years past, and why we got into this problem, was that education was the easiest thing to neglect. So partly because they have to put some money into education, they don't have a choice because of the Supreme Court mandate. They're having larger fights than they typically have over everything else that's being sacrificed because that money's moving to education. Things like mental health. Things even like early learning, which aren't technically part of the McCleary decision. So you have a lot of other fights because the Supreme Court mandate. And on the mandate, there are a couple complications, including how much you rely on local levies and stuff that the Supreme Court is pushing them to work out. So that Supreme Court mandate and just divided government is the reason they're having a second special session.
Greg Nichols, former Seattle mayor, current resident of West Seattle, where we are right now. Greg Nichols, why can the legislature not get its work done? All these problems, they were divided 3 months ago. This was about the future 3 months ago. Education was hard 3 months ago. Why are lawmakers still not done?
Well, There are a number of very catty responses that come to mind. I'll resist those, though.
Be catty. Do you want them to be catty or not? They want the cat.
Olympia is still the state capital, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think for most of us, it's completely irrelevant what's going on behind those doors.
But, irrelevant?
But they're irrelevant.
Why?
Because who are these guys? Someday they're going to pass a budget and things will go on like they were before and we'll put off funding education one more time. But I think it's fundamentally human nature, and that is you don't really get down to hard negotiations until you have to. And for whatever reason, the regular session, they didn't feel like they had to, and this first special session, they didn't feel like they had to. And
what would it take to make them feel like they have to meet the deadline that is the deadline?
Well, possibly a governor who brings them into the room and bashes heads together and who has the credibility with both sides to be able to do that.
Well, is that a shot at your fellow Democratic governor?
This is a generic. It's human nature we're talking about here. And I'm not close enough to it to know whether those attempts were made or not. But human nature, you can see it in labor negotiations all the time. You can see it with legislation. And that is until there's a real deadline and each side has a stake in it actually ending, it probably won't.
And there is a real deadline, as you know. It's July 1st, because that's when things start to change for the worst here. They really do need a budget by then, or they have to do some, you know, cutting and laying temporary layoffs.
That's when the fiscal year starts. So the budget, they can sort of play around with all the time until July 1, and then you're into the new year and shutdowns happen. I would say that the mayor, I think, is right, that you tend to wait these things out. The feeling is you get a better deal. Both sides, I think, have felt like they'll get a better deal if they wait longer, especially Republicans. And it has turned out very well for Republicans. I mean, the longer they have waited, every month we have learned that there is more and more revenue coming to state government. So this hold the line on taxes.
So why? Yeah, just wait for the new forecast to come out. Can we get a weekly forecast? So
now the hold the line on taxes message, which they have been preaching since January, looks a lot more convincing now that you've had, what, $1 billion in good news since then.
So the Republicans have been right.
They have been advantaged by waiting.
They can get down to grass tax?
Grass tax.
Too much grass. Way too much grass, but yeah.
Okay, so to recap, the legislature has just begun a second overtime session this morning. Will we tax capital gains? Will we pay for education, as the state Supreme Court and voters have ordered our representatives to do? Stay tuned. We've decided that it's this hard because government's divided right now, paying for education is especially thorny, and this is about the future, so a lot more is at stake than just any one session. And then there's human nature, which has not yet been outlawed. Okay, so now you know. Stay tuned for our coverage, of course, and you see a lot more of that at KOW.org. This is the Week in Review, and we are coming to you today from West Seattle's Youngstown Cultural Arts Center. West Seattle South Park is Seattle's new education district number one, and this is a new development in Seattle politics. So far, it's working for some better than others, as we'll find out in a moment. While a little music plays, you have a few seconds to join the conversation going on right now on Twitter, at KUOW, Facebook, KUOW Public Radio. We'll be right back. KUOW's Week in Review, live at the Youngstown Cultural Arts Center in West Seattle. West Seattle South Park is election district number one. The city has divided itself into new election districts to give neighborhoods more of a voice. That's the idea. The result is a whole bunch of first-time city council candidates. 9 candidates in this district alone. It could have been 10. Please welcome Amanda K. Helmick. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You live here in West Seattle.
I do.
You're an accountant, a mother, a wife. You had never run for office before. Why did you want so much to be on the Seattle City Council in District 1?
It's like you said, this is a neighborhood, and I'm from the neighborhood. I believe in the neighborhood, and the neighborhood needs a voice. And it's been missing here in city council for a long time.
What do you love about your neighborhood?
Oh, I love everything about my neighborhood. I love that it's a small town in a big city. I love that I know all of my neighbors. I can walk my son to school. I go to all the parks around town, and there's a lot of them. And it's close enough to downtown that I can have a job downtown and enjoy that as well.
Now, the rule was you could pay basically $1,200 to get on the ballot, or you could collect 1,200 signatures. How much time did you elected to go with signatures, and we'll talk more about that, but how much time did you spend? How did you go about getting signatures?
Well, I always kept a clipboard in my purse with the petition, and I always had a pen, and I ride the bus, I go to the grocery stores, I'm at parks, I stood at the farmer's market. I'd say I probably had maybe 100 hours in.
100 hours. Your husband says a jillion,
yes,
I understand.
Right. My husband has been amazing, and I couldn't have done this without him.
You needed 1,200 signatures. How many did you get?
The official tally was 1,318.
Great. So you're on the ballot, right?
No.
What happened?
Well, a lot of things happened. 147 of those signatures back is invalid for various reasons. The biggest reason was that people were not registered in the district, or when they signed my petition, they had moved here, but they hadn't changed their address. People who thought they were registered actually weren't. Their signatures didn't match, so what they signed on my petition wasn't on the back of their voter card. And the people had their registration canceled because of various reasons, but the reason cited was that they hadn't voted in the last two presidential elections.
Okay, so you did not make it on the ballot. You got some more signatures qualified, but some were disqualified still. You didn't make, you're not one of the nine candidates after spending a jillion hours, according to your husband. What did you learn? Nine, by the way, you finished nine signatures short.
Well, the official tally was 26 short.
Oh, okay.
After I went through the petitions and I went through the list, I matched them up myself, and we were able to determine there were 17 people that we could find that would write a declaration saying, I am this person, I am registered, I can prove it. So we ended up being nine short in total.
And you ran out of time because you couldn't get nine more signatures.
What I was told on Friday is they said, you can come down and you can bring us a check. And I asked, can I bring you more signatures? And they said no.
A check?
Mm-hmm.
How much? You mean like for $9? Because it's basically a...
No, it's an... It's,
can't you do it benign?
It's either
it's a dollar a signature is what they charge you.
You'd
Here's
think,
your $9.
You'd think that that is how it should have been, but it's not. It's either or. So I could have brought them a check for $1,199.76, but I could not bring them more signatures.
Okay, what did you learn? What's the point?
If you're registered to vote and you've just moved here, change your address. Do it now. Don't wait. If you have any problems voting, registering to vote, make sure that you follow up. You personally follow up with King County. But I also learned, don't give up.
But what's the larger point about how this system runs, in your opinion?
The biggest problem is that we're letting people pay to get on the ballot.
You refused. You could have done that from the very beginning.
I could have done that up to the minute I turned those signatures in. I could have written that check. I could have, they said, you can give it to us as a backup in case you don't get the signatures, and I said no.
On principle.
On principle, because no one should pay to get on the ballot.
And I didn't realize that almost everybody does. Almost nobody goes the signature route.
It's so rare that King County doesn't have the statistics for it. So they told me that they thought maybe 1 to 3 people a year out of all the hundreds of people that register to run.
And you think that ought to change how?
Well, we could start by making sure that people have to sign petitions. If you want to run for office, you have to get the signatures to get on the ballot. That would be the first place to start.
You want the money out of politics at the front end.
I want the money out of politics. That's the easiest way to do that. You start at the very base of how people run and change that system.
Final question for you. These are not the old days. You have nine candidates just from your West Seattle South Park district.
We do.
Do any of them meet your standards?
They do. And all of them in some way do meet my standards. They all live here in West Seattle or South Park. They're all really wonderful people. But they all paid to get on the ballot, so it makes it hard for me.
Okay, let's talk about the lessons of this. Amanda K. Helmick, thank you for coming, and thank you for getting involved and wanting to be part of that voice of a neighborhood you love.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Boy, compare how hard it is to first become a legislator with how easy it is to stay an incumbent, Greg Nichols. How hard should it be Incumbents have a huge advantage. How hard should it be to break into office?
Well, the fact that we still have 9 candidates in this district and several candidates in districts around the city and the at-large seats, there is some barrier, but it's obviously not an insurmountable barrier.
What about Amanda's point of that you shouldn't be able to pay to get on the ballot? What do you think?
I think that's a good point. There are places where you can only get on the ballot by having signatures. There are problems in some of those places with signatures not being valid or being paid for. So, you know, any system that you have is going to have some flaws. I think having the choice is kind of a nice balance.
C.R. Douglas from Q13, what's the lesson of Amanda's story and this new Seattle election system?
Well, the lesson is probably get 300 more signatures than you think you need, because mm-hmm. a lot will be disqualified. I mean, listen, we've had a lot of ballot initiatives that, you know, one of the games here with all these ballot initiatives and these signature drives is you got to really overdo it, because the invalidation rate is pretty high. You have all kinds of problems, people signing that don't live here, aren't voting, all the rest. She's very refreshing. And I must say that the move to districts and the spirit behind it is playing out best in District 1 than any other district, it seems to me. You have more people running. You have a diverse group of people running. You have the kinds of people who are very neighborhood-focused. I think most of the 9, probably all the 9, would not have even jumped into an at-large race, probably wouldn't have done well in an at-large race. So this is opening up opportunity, this move to districts, which was really the spirit of the whole effort behind it.
We'll talk one more time this hour about these new district elections, but Joni Balter, any last words, lessons from Amanda's
well,
story?
Well, I don't have the lesson exactly from her story. I'm the contrarian, I guess, on district elections, because I've never been a fan of them. I think they lead to sort of myopic thinking. You don't have folks who are thinking big picture. We're going to have a hugely expensive transportation plan on the ballot. And I would like the council members who are thinking about that in the future, that's how that would work, to be thinking citywide.
We'll talk more about that in 20 minutes. Can you wait, Greg Nichols?
I can wait.
Your hand is up.
I am, because I really take issue with that. I represented a district, West Seattle, Burien, Vashon Island, for 14 years. And the advantage was that every corner of King County was represented on the county council.
Will you hold that thought?
And we did big things. We did growth management. We created Sound Transit and light rail. We did big things. And being from a district doesn't mean you can't think bigger.
And that's where we're going in 20 minutes. We have a lot of the week in review still to come. And in a moment, we'll talk about another of this week's top stories, that yesterday the city endorsed a smoking ban in all city parks. Does this make Seattle a happier or sadder place? In a moment on The Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to KUOW's Week in Review, coming to you live at the Youngstown Cultural Arts Center. Right on Del Ridge Way in West Seattle. We're in election district number 1. All our election coverage, by the way, is at kuow.org/elections. You can tell us what is important to you in your district, and we're going to talk in a few minutes, I promise, about what the change in Seattle elections is going to mean for this city. We will no longer elect all of our, or even most of our, city council members citywide. But first, we go on discussing the top stories of the week, as we do every Friday. Last night, the city of Seattle decided to ban smoking in all city parks. It's going to happen. Does this make Seattle, on balance, a happier place or a less happy place, and why? Joni Balter.
Okay, let's do it as a math
from
equation.
From Civic Cocktail, Seattle Channel.
Let's do it as a math equation. The more people in the parks will be healthy and happy. So, but they won't be, as we were talking before the show, like extremely happy. But I think you have to consider the parks for the greater good of the most number of people.
Okay. And who's what's on the less happy scale?
Well, the less happy scale is this issue that has emerged, and then I think the folks have come up with a pretty good compromise on that. And the idea is that you don't want a ban on smoking to turn into an excuse for harassing the homeless and other folks who are smoking in the parks. So what they did was they changed how they are going to administer this. Instead of a $27 fine on the spot, you get a couple of warnings. After the warnings, it gets a little less pleasant. But, you know, the parks are for the greater number of people, in my view, and I think that's the way they have to go, and that is the way they're going.
Okay, so Joni says some people inconvenience, but on the whole, a healthier, happier place. Greg Nichols, former mayor of Seattle, what do you say?
Well, I, you know, helped pass the ban on indoor smoking as a and as chairman of the Board of Health for 6 years. Got the Marlboro Man out of the kingdom, kind of dates me.
Marlboro Man and Kingdom.
I'm not
that's
gonna,
a double. That's a double.
I am not going to defend smoking, but I do think that our parks need to be an inclusive place. I think they are for everybody, and particularly they're for people who don't have, you know, the ability to have a second home or vacation spots. Therefore, you know, working people in this city to be able to get out and relax, and for a few, that means being able to have a smoke. They need to be a ways away from, you know, other people, non-smokers. But we've had that regulation in place. It seems to me that it has worked pretty well. I haven't heard huge pushback about that part of it.
You haven't heard huge pushback because nobody enforces that 25-foot rule.
Well, I think largely we're self-regulating in most of our parks in terms of how people behave, civil behavior. So, again, I haven't heard of huge problems with people insisting on smoking within groups of people they don't know. So I think it's not one of the most important issues that we're dealing with, and it makes people feel less included as part of the community.
So on balance, more suffering than pleasure from this smoking.
I think for some people that will mean they won't be able to enjoy the parks, and I think that's too bad.
C.R. Douglas from Q13.
I think the quality of life effect will be probably zero. I think I agree with the mayor. I think this was a irrelevant or non-existent problem. I mean, there just have not been a bunch of pitchforks at the city hall or at the parks department saying ban smoking. I mean, the driver for this was the Downtown Seattle Association. I mean, you know, good group that care about downtown, but, you know, it was a kind of downtown business interest, if you will, that was really pushing this. I think the fact that it's never been cited suggests
because it's tough with the yardstick, 25
feet. This is the 25-foot rule, and nobody enforces
it. I just think it's not been a problem, and I think banning it will probably, on balance, hurt the folks who kind of that's their last refuge. But it's just not a significant policy.
And
this has not been a problem.
What do you think would happen if this went on the ballot to Seattle? And I'm going to throw it to the audience here. Oh. If you were asked, do you want parks to be smoke-free? Well, clap if you agree, because they can't.
Clapping for smoke-free. Okay, now clapping for smoke them if you got them. That was at least 50-50, maybe even more yes on smoking, I think.
It's not
allowed.
An audience member says, what about marijuana smoking?
It's actually not permitted under 502, but...
Right. Can't do it. What about the... you know, when you criminalize more things, you get more confrontations between citizens and police, Joni, and we've seen how badly that can end.
Well,
what
I think I think the park, the way they just handled it, kind of softened that whole bit. That's what they were doing. That's why that was a good compromise.
But you still have to tell people they're doing something they're not supposed to be doing, and if they keep doing it, you're going to get arrested. That is a confrontation.
Yeah, but, you know, they wouldn't really enforce it in some punchy sort of way. The idea is there are rules in parks. You're not supposed to trample on the plants. You're not supposed to do a variety of other things, throw your garbage on the ground. Okay. You know.
I mean, every time you do add one of these rules, one of these laws, you immediately get into the issue of when is it enforced? Is it selective? Are you doing it more downtown than other places? You know, what's the racial makeup of the people who are getting? So you open yourself up to all kinds of inspection and examination from sort of the outside world when you do these rules.
And did you see that they actually have a committee that they're going to create to make sure it's not, you know, unfairly administered? So it seems like they covered. I know. Thank goodness.
So you add another layer of bureaucracy.
I agree with
when
that.
You add a rule like this.
So two out of our three panelists say the quality of life gets, if anything, a little worse in Seattle because yesterday the Seattle Board of Park Commissioners endorsed the idea of completely banning smoking in city parks. No fines attached. Theoretically, police can warn you a couple of times and you could be arrested. No one seems to think this is going to get much enforced. Yeah, it's a good idea, Joni. Let's give the last word to the audience. one more time, quality of life in Seattle because of this approval, a ban on smoking in parks. Clap if quality of life goes up because of it. Quality of life goes, if anything, down because of this city smoking ban in parks. We're down on it, but we're up on life and sunshine here at the Youngstown Cultural Arts Center in West Seattle. In District 1, right up the hill from a drilling rig. I passed it on the way here. So I hear our audience saying quality of life, thumbs up from the drilling rig down the hill. I may have read that wrong. It's a topic we're going to cover in a moment on the Weekend Review because we've been talked so much about how the mayor of Seattle has done this and that to try to stop this from happening, supposedly. We have a former mayor of Seattle. I'm going to ask him if he'd been mayor, and he was quite a greeny mayor, what would have happened to this rig? That and more coming up on the Weekend Review. I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to Friday. Seattle's new election district numero uno is West Seattle South Park. And that's where we are, West Seattle's Youngstown Cultural Arts Center on Delridge Way by the West Seattle Golf Course and the playfield and just across the bridge and up the hill from an oil rig, the Shell Oil Arctic drilling rig that's parked at the port of Seattle's Terminal 5. That's technically in District 1, right? Terminal 5, that's city property. Yeah, so you are housing the Shell Arctic drilling rig, which from a purely aesthetic point of view, I have to say, driving past, I didn't find it ugly. I found it kind of, you got the yellow platform, and it looks like a space shuttle.
As long as there's no smoking there.
Yes, no smoking on the oil rig. Okay, so I already heard from you. Our audience is more bummed than happy to have this rig down the hill. Greg Nichols, you were arguably America's greenest mayor, cover of Vanity Fair back in your day. You made national headlines 10 years ago for saying Seattle would cut its carbon emissions below 1990 levels. How would you have handled this oil rig situation differently from our current mayor?
Well, first let me say I was in Washington, D.C. last week at a summit of environmental leaders from education, faith community, environmental community, business community, and this was being talked about. The protests in Seattle were being talked about and in a very positive manner. So I think the protests have been absolutely phenomenal. It has raised for our local community, nationally, and I think internationally, this issue of how are we going to break our addiction to fossil fuels.
And to quickly remind you, it's come to a head now because the Obama administration has said yes to drilling on the North Slope. And so Shell is going to go and drill exploratory wells in the Chukchi Sea. It happens in the summertime. They need their fleet serviced the rest of the year, and it's happening in Seattle.
Yeah, and I don't know the permit issue. I don't know. I haven't had the kind of briefings that Mayor Murray has had on what his authority is or isn't in that regard. So I'm not going to second guess him. I think it was a good symbolic, obviously symbolic since the thing is parked down here.
But haven't you read action. Enough to know what you would do differently
as
mayor?
I would also have spoken out I think I might have put in my crosshairs the Port of Seattle. This was a stupid decision on their part. We had a 400-acre container terminal there. I remember being at the ribbon cutting. Al Gore cut the ribbon for it. It was a $500 million investment, and it's shut down so that we can lease it out to Shell Oil. That to me is a very odd.
Well, Mayor and Mayor Murray did say that, so yeah. It sounds like you're together.
So I agree with that.
To no effect.
I think it's unfair for me to say, yeah, I would have done the permit or not knowing the ins and outs of it. Okay. But I think making it an issue and sending that message is very important, and I think it's being done very effectively. I like it.
I think the fault here lies with the Port of Seattle. The commissioners had a chance to hold this back, to give people more time to voice their opinions, and they didn't. So I think that once a contract is signed, it's very difficult to do business with government entities that are subject to political whim. So once the contract is signed, you kind of have to hold on to that. But that said, it's a jolly good time to get rid of most of those port commissioners, except for Tom Albro, who tried to stop it. He couldn't even get a second to hold this thing back. And that's where the fault lies. I admire the protesters. I think they're speaking out in very productive ways. And sometimes you have to pull on the edge of something to make change, and that's what they're doing.
What are the odds that all the port commissioners except Tom Albro get voted out of office?
I think the odds are high that some of them are going to get voted out.
Some, but not all?
Well, I don't know who's running against them, so okay. I don't have the benefit of saying, oh, that's a better candidate or not a better candidate. But I think some of them are going to be voted out, and they should be.
I think what we're realizing is that as time goes on, it's looking more and more like the CHI activists and protests are actually making a difference. I think this has moved from being just symbolic. I mean, what we're learning is that the public pressure they're putting and the squeeze they're putting in conjunction with the city's squeeze with some permitting, the county did a little squeeze with permitting, the state this week did a little squeeze on their own, that Shell, and you can hear it from their folks, are starting to sound frustrated in public. I mean, this is actually messing with their plan.
And what's your evidence for that? How is it messing their plan?
Because they're starting to get frustrated. We have heard that there are all these alternatives. And if you don't go to Seattle, you'll go, well, it's not quite that easy. I mean, you actually need a port that is a deep water port. For instance, this doesn't work in Everett. You need a place that has a vacancy. Not every port just can handle this. Dutch Harbor in Seattle and Alaska is one of the other places, but that has a lot of weather problems. If you go farther down to California, you're starting to get too far away for sort of a winter back and forth. So,
but they're using Seattle.
They are using Seattle, but but my point is, I think the squeeze is having an effect. They also, I've heard them say, a member of the port said, well, they'll just go to Tacoma. Well, I think one effect of these protests has been, there's a political price now for another port to actually house these. You tell me that this is going to be super easy just to go to Tacoma? Is Tacoma going to touch this? In fact, we now have some joint agreement with Tacoma, the port. So I'm not sure that it is that easy a decision. I think Seattle would sort of have to agree to that. Anyway, my point is I think there's an interesting kind of effect going on here that's larger than we think.
Okay, last word. I haven't yet seen, it's an interesting theory, I haven't seen the reality yet of a price actually being paid. I see the rig being housed in Seattle just like they wanted it. But Joni and Greg Nichols.
Well, again, I think that the message is not just to Shell, but it is to the larger community that we need to question our use of fossil fuels.
Yeah.
Should we really be digging it up just as fast as we possibly can and burning it? Or should we be thinking about the future in terms of what it does to the climate and what it does to the ground?
Yeah, that's the message, Joni. Evidence
it does
of
seem
an
that
effect?
Shell pushed back this week a little bit. They sent the Alaska governor here to meet with Governor Jay Inslee, and it was kind of to say, you know, like our state is hugely dependent on this. And, you know, we've always been big buds going back in history, and can we continue to be big buds? They were trying to counter. I mean, it was a small in comparison to the CHI activists.
Sierra, you're raising your hand. So
well, just one more thing. I think, and TV loves this story. We're all over it. It's been a great visual to cover.
I told you it was a good-looking visual.
I think you haven't even seen the biggest effect and the biggest event, which is when they move this thing out of Puget Sound and of Seattle's harbor in the next couple of weeks to go up and actually start this exploratory drilling, that is when you are going to actually have the civil disobedience. That is when you're going to have these Kai activists jumping all over this thing, barges trying to stop this. Coming into Puget Sound, they basically let it arrive.
Right.
There were activists around, but no one tried to stop it. Civil disobedience is in the future.
When does that happen? Do we know?
Just in the next couple of weeks. Okay. They're leaving to go up to drill.
Yes, in the next couple of weeks, Shell will actually try to have this whole thing pay off, and we'll see what kind of protests happen. We'll see if any price is paid. We'll see whether Port of Seattle commissioners pay a price at the ballot box, and stay tuned. This is KUOW's Week in Review, live at the Youngstown Cultural Arts Center. Why? Because we are doing this all summer long. This is District 1. There are now 7 new election districts in Seattle. We're going hyper-local to change the way this city is run by having only a couple of citywide elected council members and 7 elected neighborhood by neighborhood. Why does that matter? We're going to talk about that, and as we got a preview, we're going to, I think, debate that here in a few minutes on KUOW's Week in Review. KUOW's Week in Review is live from the Youngstown Cultural Arts Center. We're in Seattle's first election district. Next week, we're coming to District 2 at the Columbia City Theater. And I'm warning you, get there early, because everyone here in West Seattle is also coming to the Columbia City Theater because they love it that much. We're going to talk now about whether meals should be a thing of the past. This week, the New York Times reported on the trend of tech workers giving up what you and I would call food and instead downing quick, healthy meal replacement shakes so they don't have to stop working. The software engineer who founded one of these nutrient drink companies says food is the fossil fuel of human energy, an enormous market full of waste, regulation, and biased allocation with geopolitical implications, and we are deeply dependent on it. I ask you, panel, as technology fills our city, if techies can invent a more efficient way to fuel our bodies, our meat prisons, why should we eat meals, C.R. Douglas from Q13?
Well, when I was a kid back in high school, and I was very active, running around in student government and all kinds of things.
I'll bet you were.
Very busy. I, on several occasions, voiced to my family, my parents, my siblings, to my friends, why isn't there a food pill?
Yes.
I do not have any time to eat. I want a food pill to make it easier. Well, here we are. Here
is
the food pill, and I couldn't be less excited. call it maturity.
You lost your youthful energy? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think you realize over time that food is the great uniter. Food is a social event. Food is a family event. I think if we want to sort of move food out of our system, it would be
okay.
Take that any way you want. I think that would be a great loss. I think it's one thing to say we need a supplement or two, and I eat a protein shake or two in the week if I'm on the run or something. But
what if you were always on the run?
Meal replacement feels like a wrong direction for society.
Former Seattle mayor, and as we've said, green mayor, wants to combat climate change with all we're worth. Greg Nichols, think how much time, money, effort, gasoline it takes to go to the store, to buy the food, to prepare the food, the time it takes to eat the food, the cleanup after the meal, the scrubbing, the water that we cascade our dishes with. The food pill. Why should we still have meals when we have the food pill?
Well, and perhaps there's a happy medium. I could skip a couple of meals without a big trouble. But as CR says, there's more to being human than simply adding up your proteins and carbohydrates and amino acids and downing them. There is a social aspect. Even in this day and age of Twitter and texting, the human interaction is an important thing. And coming around,
can't you chat while you pop a food pill? You don't even have to break your conversation for a moment.
You probably don't. Although if you're so busy working, then maybe you can.
You can do anything you want with the food pill.
There is more to life.
With the nutrition shake.
There is more to life than work. You need to learn how to play. You need to learn how to relax.
More time for play with the food pill.
Eating. And if they come up with a wine pill, then we'll talk.
Joni Balter from Civic Cocktail on the Seattle Channel. We're just up the hill from the Duwamish. If we showed our Duwamish ancestors a modern meal, they would say, where's the hunting and the gathering? You need people together foraging for berries and roots and stalking game and fish and initiating the young. That's what food means. Well, what food means changes with time. And we have technical fixes for lots of things now, including the meal. We have meal replacement shakes.
So what I'm just kind of laughing at throughout this whole discussion is the notion that, this is such a food, the millennial generation that's coming up is so foodie oriented. They take pictures constantly of every single thing they're eating. And this is up against this sort of liquid sawdust that you're going to inhale through some kind of a platypus. I don't think so. That sounds like a lousy idea. I'd rather go with the salmon that might be cooking at the Duwamish.
Well, you may be wondering, is this really healthy? I mean, can that actually sustain you, this meal replacement shake? We put that to Judy Simon, who's a dietitian at the University of Washington Medical Center.
Absolutely not. I could see some people using these as maybe an occasional meal replacement, but not as something to eat day in, day out. They're really missing a lot of important nutrition that you get from food. And actually, everything in it has been processed. So it's really not the way Mother Nature intended us to eat food. You're missing all the polyphenols and antioxidants that you get from fruits and vegetables and whole grains that you really can't always make up in the lab. So I honestly don't think that the average person could last on this very long because it's not that satisfying. And we get more out of our meals than just fullness. Do you know what I mean? We get actually the pleasure of eating food, which I think you're going to be missing if you're living on Soylent.
Soylent, the name of one of these nutrition shakes. Thumbs down, says the nutritionist. What do you think, audience? Boo. Boo on meal replacement shakes. Okay, so even the nutritionist is saying we're not there yet, and it sounds like she doesn't want to go there either. Do not invest. If this panel and this audience is any indicator, I would not sink your life savings into Soylent or Schmoylent or Schmilk or any of these actual companies that are meal replacement shakes, reported on this week by the New York Times. Okay, a little more week in review to go before the top of the hour when we come back. We're back with KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke, and our panel, and you are, we transported you. You are now at the Youngstown Cultural Arts Center. Again, this is our first summer show on the road. We're going to be in Columbia City next week, Columbia City Theater, because they're District 2. This is District 1 in Seattle. It's a new thing. Seattle's into election districts now, so we no longer have the whole city voting for every council member. There'll still be two of those at-large positions, but seven council members elected by district. In a nutshell, Q13 political analyst C.R. Douglas, how will this new system change the city of Seattle?
I don't think we know. I mean, one thing that's clear is that you have more people running in these races than we've had when they were at-large seats. Nine in this one alone. Some candidates that wouldn't, as I said earlier, probably have a chance in an at-large system. I think you're going to have definitely a more focus on neighborhood issues. I think the equitable distribution of city money will probably be even more so. Although, interestingly enough, we divide the money pretty evenly around neighborhoods, but this will sort of push it even more. But in the end, if you look at the governments that are by districts, be that county, be that state, be that congressional, it's not geography that really changes things. It at the end of the day is still philosophy. So what matters is, are progressives going to be sort of the block in the city council, or are the more conservatives? That's what makes the difference in the county council. That makes the difference ultimately in the state legislature. And I think the jury is out on which direction this is going to move. I don't think we know if districts is going to sort of create a more progressive candidate that emerges, or a sort of more neighborhood conservative candidate. There are theories about both will happen, but until we know that, I don't think it's obvious that just by geography, suddenly the city is going to change.
Joni Balta, you've never liked this new election
system. I've never
liked
this. There's a big difference between the running and the governing. And so right now, there's this feeling of this is really great because there's so many people in it. So who doesn't love that? That's great. But then I'm looking forward to the net effect of what kind of a city council are we going to have. And the folks who paid for this measure, by the way, thought they would have a few, shall we say, middle of the road or more conservative people. That ain't going to happen. I always say that Seattle's 31 flavors of liberals, it's going to be way more liberal. And by the folks who are running, that is what we are going to get. So what is the effect of that? For one thing, and I'm sort of getting ahead to the argument with the mayor here, which I'm looking forward to, and we go back a few years on that. You know, so you want some experience on the city council. I do. I don't know if anybody else does. I can't tell that everybody else does. You want some people, and you do have the two at large, who see the city in the big picture way that we've always seen it. One of the arguments for district elections that always just kind of like, I can't get into this, is the idea that other cities are doing it and therefore Seattle should do it. Really? Those cities seem to follow us on a lot of things, and I liked it that way better.
Last word to former Seattle Mayor Greg Nichols.
Well, I guess I would say give democracy a chance. People can think big even in small places. City council members elected at large can think about national and international issues, whether it's climate change or human rights, even though they only represent the city of Seattle government. So I think that it's exciting. It's put new energy into our city debate, and I look forward to the results.
You're excited,
if it doesn't
but
work,
how will it change the city in your opinion?
Well, I think every corner of the city will have a voice, and I think that that has been missing.
Well, if you look at a map, and this changes it with different city council elections, usually, and there was one district that wasn't elected, that wasn't very well represented in the last time, but usually they are spread all over the city. So you do have somebody that you know from your neighborhood. But you also know that those people are thinking like, okay, let's either take like Seattle Center or the transportation plan. I'll take either one as an example to argue about. You want people who are not just saying, what exactly does this mean exactly for West Seattle? Yes, for West Seattle, because I'm here and all that good stuff, but also the rest of the city. That's my goal for it.
In democracy, you always search for the common good. And I believe that human beings in good faith, meeting even at City Hall, can find that can find that common good.
Joni, can we count you down as sour on human nature then?
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all. I want folks who think bigger on the council, and I want folks who have some experience and who are thinking more broadly when it comes to like a $930 million transportation plan. I don't want that to be carved into, what about, we're not even, we're not perfect. Maybe that's not the neighborhood that needs the most investment. Some neighborhoods don't have sidewalks.
Talk about balance. Talk about balance. Joni Balter's pessimistic about our new election system that brings us here to District 1 in South Park, West Seattle. Greg Nichols is very upbeat about it, and C.R. Douglas says it's too early to tell. We know neighborhood issues will rise to the fore, but what will those be? Audience, I'll give you a last chance. Thumbs up on your new district system. Thumbs not on your district. We know we love your district. Or thumbs down on the new system. Okay.
Wow.
So far, some cautious optimism at the Youngstown Cultural Arts Center, which we love. This has been KOW's Week in Review. We're in District 1, and we want to thank the Youngstown Cultural Arts Center and the wonderful people there. It's really a lovely space. You know, it was built in 1917, and it gives me—I must have enjoyed my childhood because I feel so happy being here in the auditorium. Thank you, and it's full of wonderful programs now, after school and otherwise. Thank you to the KOW ops folks, the events people who make this happen, to our fantastic West Seattle audience. You're great. And we'll see 100% of you at the Columbia City Theater, I assume, to soak up the vibe in District 2. And thank you to producer Jason Pagano for reminding me of all the thank yous. I'm Bill Radke, and you know we're on iTunes. Get our podcasts. Go to Stitcher. Go to our website, KUOW.org. Tweet us at KUOW. And we love C.R. Douglas from Q13, Greg Nichols, formerly mayor of this town, and Joni Balcher from Civic Cocktail and Seattle Channel. Thank you. Will you thank our guests with me?
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you.